Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
All right, you're welcome back. Roy O'Connor, the Irish Independence rugby correspondent, is with us this evening, Roy.
Hey, Nathan, how's it going?
So we get on to Joe Marler and his suspension in a little while. But today, rugby, like all the other sports, has been in turmoil with, really, I guess, the season in doubt at this stage. All Irish rugby suspended for the next 2 weeks. The Pro 14 suspended indefinitely in response to the coronavirus pandemic. The Heineken Champions Cup quarterfinal between Leinster and Saracens still very much up in the air. As of now, it goes ahead. Wales-Scotland on Saturday somehow is still going ahead, it seems. Well, rugby, like everything else, I guess, just in a state of flux at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of hard to know where to start with all that, isn't it? I mean, without, you know, we're not going to adjudicate on any of the decisions. It seems to make sense from the outside. I mean, at the end of the day, none of this is particularly important. While livelihoods are involved, public health takes center stage. For some reason, the English have taken a different approach. And at least there'll be some rugby on telly on Saturday for, you know, as some solace. But the Irish Rugby Football Union have kind of, and the Pro 14 have fallen into line with the government guidelines today. And to be honest, no one's really surprised. I think it's been inevitable for a number of weeks that this is kind of coming down the tracks. It's just going to be very interesting to see how it all plays out.
So from a Pro 14 point of view, they've suspended the league indefinitely, it seems. And with the way the calendar works out, it's difficult to see where and how they finish this season if there's a delay of anything more than a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, given the nature of the league and the fact that it crosses so many borders and so many flights are you know, required to play, you know, run-of-the-mill fixtures, it's really going to be a challenge for them to have any sort of any sort of results this season. I mean, they're already running out of windows. They do have those three European windows in theory, but we're right up against them already with March 29th. The first European window is the next weekend. That's the game, you know, Ulster and Leinster are both involved in European action that weekend. So, you know, unless they come up with some sort of Duckworth-Lewis methods of kind of finding a finishing table based on results thus far, and have some sort of a playoffs based on that in May, you know, it's not going to be a full season. But, you know, if things have passed on, if all these measures have worked, then maybe we might have some sort of a finale. And there is supposed to be a final in Cardiff in, you know, I think it's at the start of June at this stage. We might get something, but I think everything's up in the air at this stage. And you know, I think, you know, we've seen the Champions League, we've seen the, you know, the Euros is potentially going to be put back for 2021. The Pro 14 is pretty small beer in the world, you know, in the vastly commercial world of European sport. And, you know, like South Africa is at the very early stages of this. But if they suddenly come on, you know, have a lot of, you know, if they're on a slightly later curve and Europe gets over it, but they're behind, you know, just there's so many moving parts to play. It's very hard to see how they're going to get that competition over the line.
And it is a totally unprecedented situation, and nobody could have predicted this. But I guess as well, it does show that the calendar is so crowded, there is very little wiggle room.
Well, absolutely. And the rugby calendar has been a major problem for a long time. You know, and this, it takes something like this to show the vested interests that are at play and all of the different kind of things that pull this game apart and have such a divide between North and South and all of those sort of things, that they need to get this in order. But to be honest, even with an integrated, coordinated calendar, I'm not sure how you survive a pandemic. Mm. I mean, it's as I said earlier, like they got to respond to what the governments are telling them. You know, we're seeing in football the players being infected and all that sort of thing. I mean, it's like they've just got to put it up, press pause, and see where they, you know, where they come out at the end of it. I mean, like, do you start factoring in break weekends so that if games are postponed, you then have windows to do it? Maybe that's what you do in the future, but there's a commercial imperative. You know, the Six Nations games, you know, that have been postponed are going to cost the cash flow of the unions an awful lot of money. And that's probably why the Scotland and Wales game this weekend is going ahead. So, you know, it's hard to point the finger at anyone in this regard. I do think that even with the best laid plans, you'd still be in trouble with the current situation.
Yeah, and it's very hard not to start any question about this by saying it's clearly all relative to the much greater problem that is there. The IRFU's decision, obviously, they had no choice to follow on from the IRFU from the GEA after Leo Varadkar's speech earlier today. It includes all training sessions. So, like, you think of the senior international players whose heads must just be in an absolute spin. The Leinster players thought they had Six Nations games. That's cancelled. Then they're going back to their province. It looked even, I think you were talking on Monday night about them potentially going to South Africa this weekend and playing a game down there. That's now gone. And now there aren't even any training sessions. They don't even get to go into work, well, it seems, for the next few weeks.
No, that ban on training doesn't apply to the professionals.
Okay.
So Leinster, as I understand it, will continue to train at UCD, which UCD is the campus is open as it stands, and they have a backup at Energia Park in Donnybrook, and they have their centre of excellence there. So that was my understanding as well. I just sent a question to the Leinster press officer a little bit earlier just to wonder, would they just go to South Africa because they might be allowed to train there if they're not allowed to train in Ireland? If the flights are booked, why not go for a bit of warm weather training? But no, that from a... he quickly pointed out from a corporate governance point of view, it probably wouldn't be the best idea. And to be honest, it sounded like they weren't going to go even before this decision was made, that they were taking a decision based on their employees' best interest, that, you know, staying at home with their families was the best thing to do. Obviously, the league would have probably heard that and done that. So, yeah, no, they'll be allowed to train. They're basically in Saracens mode now. They've got a 3-week lead into the biggest game of their season, if it takes place.
Any indication as to when a decision might be made on that game?
I think it'll be closer to the time. I think it'll be, you know, it'll probably follow along with the government. The government have obviously put this date in place for March 29th. I presume that's relatively arbitrary as a 2-week thing to see how we go. But it's, you know, Dr. Holland said earlier that, you know, that is definitely a movable feast that can be pushed back at any time. And if it's pushed back, that fixture is under a lot of pressure. But at the same time, because of what we talked about earlier with the schedule, whereas the Six Nations has a bit of wiggle room and the Pro 14 is a much longer season based on the league, you could potentially decide your playoff places in May based on your league as it is now. Those quarterfinals either take place now or you're in real trouble as to whether you finish the competition. So there might be pressure to play those behind closed doors. But if things ramp up even more and the pressure comes on from the governments, you know, I think all bets are off with this thing. So yeah. I think if it's going to take place behind closed doors, probably, if it's going to play, it seems more likely to me. There's obviously a massive financial hit there for Leinster, but it may, you know, I think we're just in the lap of the gods at this stage.
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier on, we will have plenty of rugby coverage still over the coming weeks on Monday Night Rugby and Wednesday Night Rugby. We will have Brian O'Driscoll, Ron O'Gara. I'm sure we'll have plenty of nostalgic chats and hear from some interesting people over the next little while as well. Let's talk about what we do know then. Joe Marler, a 10-week ban for the England prop after grabbing Alan Wynne-Jones' genitals during Saturday's Six Nations win over Wales. Is this the correct length of sentence for Joe Marler?
Well, I mean, it's kind of a how long is a piece of string thing, isn't it? I mean, you look at the other bans that were handed out today, and it does seem a little bit excessive if you think that Manu Tuilagi and the French Pop House could have caused, you know, serious injury with their acts on the field. So, you know, Marler, I think, crossed the line. I think he deserves a lengthy punishment. He didn't endanger Alan Wynne-Jones all that much. I mean, he definitely crossed, an ethical line and a moral line by doing what he did. But Manu Tuilagi, what did he get?
Four weeks.
He got a 6-week suspension reduced by 2 weeks to take account his good conduct and immediate remorse. You know, maybe Joe Marler did get the right ban, but Manu Tuilagi got the wrong ban. And Manu Tuilagi's ban should have been equally as severe, because while I do think that he should have thrown the book at Joe Marler, and I do think that he crossed the line, and his conduct was very much unbefitting of, you know, an elite sportsman, a professional sportsman representing his country, Manu Tuilagi and House both could have caused serious injury with their acts, and maybe their punishment, maybe the world, the Six Nations disciplinary committees need to think about the, you know, the potential impact of these acts. And, you know, I just don't understand this leniency for people turning up in a nice tie and showing a bit of remorse. And, you know, like, they're always going to do that. I mean, that's the obvious thing to do. I mean, that shouldn't really count. It should be about what happens on the pitch, and it should be a proper kind of ban in response. So I do think the 10 weeks, I mean, it seems excessive, it seems a big ban, but I do think they had to meet the act with, you know, an appropriate sentence. At the same time, I think Tuilagi probably deserves something similar.
Yeah, I guess not even to play devil's advocate, as you say, there's such ethical concerns about what he did, and it's such an unusual situation. Maybe they felt they just really had to clamp down to make sure something like this never happened again.
Yeah, and I think they, like I have no real problem with the 10 weeks. My problem is probably the fact that the other bans were so lenient. So I think that 10 weeks like will definitely put people off doing what Joe Marler did on the pitch. And although Joe Marler didn't appear to acknowledge that he'd done much wrong himself in his hearing, you know, I think other players, why they would ever think that it's the right thing to do on the pitch, I'll never know. But if they do, if it crosses their mind that maybe that's what they want to do on the pitch, that 10 weeks will flash in front of them and will probably put them off.
Yeah, maybe over the next couple of weeks we might try and get a sighting commissioner on at some stage to explain their thinking around these decisions, because you say you always hear the remorse, the good character line, but they still did what they did. And even looking at this ban for Marler, so the minimum ban for, and I know you touched on this on Monday night, the wording would always be quite interesting, because the World Rugby rule is for grabbing, twisting or squeezing the genitals, which was 12 weeks, and this wasn't exactly that. So the commission reduced that by 3 weeks to take into account mitigating factors, which I'm not quite sure, like, was it that there was a bit of a scrap going on, including his good character and his remorse. But then they also increased the ban by a week after taking into account his recent disciplinary record. It seems to contradict itself.
Oh, they do this stuff all the time, you know, to take a few weeks away and add them on. And it just, I mean, I'd be interested to see. They usually publish the full details of these reports in a couple of days' time. And this would be one I'd very much be interested to see, because they usually go into a lot of detail about things. And I think this one is rather interesting. But yeah, like, I mean, the fact that he showed remorse, yeah, great. But I mean, we can all show remorse after we do something terrible. I mean, they also point out the fact that he completely denied, you know, grabbing, twisting or squeezing the genitals of a Welsh player and did not accept that it warranted a red card. So, I mean, his remorse had its limits. So, but yeah, 10 weeks, I think everyone can be, like, I think some people seem to think 10 weeks is far too much. There's also a perception out there that the 10 weeks is going to basically be a load of weekends off because of the coronavirus. But, you know, as I understand it, they have to be match weekends. So,
Okay. Like,
it could be into next season, the way things are going.
Yeah, and as I think you touched on Monday night, with the way place he is in his career at the moment, it could well be the end of his international career.
Absolutely, and he just got that number one jersey back with Mako Vinopola being off in Tonga on compassionate leave, and then also then coming back, having transited through Hong Kong and being sent home to Saracens. And then Ellis Genge, like, if England did have a game this weekend and Ellis Genge was starting with Vinopola on the bench, that, you know, Marler would have a struggle to get back in, and he is of an age where, you know, these chances are finite.
Marler, one of only three English players up in front of the sighting commissioner in Dublin today. So Tuilagi got 4 weeks. Courtney Laws got away with his first half tackle on Alan Jones without a suspension. And I know a lot has been spoken about Eddie Jones and the example he's setting and what his players are getting away with and the way he defends them. Interesting today that the English Rugby Football Union apologised to referee Ben O'Keefe for the comments made by Eddie Jones after the victory over Wales. At the time, Eddie Jones says, "At the end, we were 13 against 16. And that's hard." The RFU CEO, Bill Sweeney, has now warned the England head coach that similar views in the future will not be tolerated. They said, "We don't condone comments that undermine the integrity of match officials who are central to the sport and its values. We've discussed with Eddie Jones the nature of the comments he made to the media in the immediate aftermath of a dramatic finish to the England-Wales match, and have made it clear that such comments are not in line with the values of the sport or the RFU." I suspect that the RFU got quite a few complaints from their own referees about what Eddie Jones said after the game.
Yeah, and I was probably a little bit dismissive of what Eddie Jones said when I was in on Monday, but, you know, on reflection, thinking about it a little bit more, I think I maybe have become dismissive of Eddie Jones full stop, because he does say an awful lot, and I think a lot of it is obfuscation and trying to move the narrative on from his team. But, yeah, if you think about, you know, like, you know, to suggest that Ben O'Keefe was biased against England, well, like, I mean, England got away with murder in that game for long stretches of it anyway. But, you know, Ben O'Keefe's a good ref. He's you know, his reputation should be unimpeachable. I think it's very interesting in the context that Eddie Jones is about to enter into contract negotiations with the RFU. And while they were very hot on extending his contract, like, it finishes midway through this World Cup cycle at the end of, you know, I think after, at the end of next season, Bill Sweeney was very keen to nail him down after the World Cup. They seem to have gone cold on him. And the language they've used in that statement is very interesting. If it, you know, it doesn't sound like they're particularly happy with him. He's obviously getting good results, but, you know, are they, how much blowback are the suits in Twickenham getting as a result of the way Eddie Jones carries on? And do they feel like the team is so strong now that, you know, any coach could probably get, you know, good results out of them? I mean, that's a very interesting scenario. Jones has been really, really good for the English team. Maybe not their overall reputation, but as a performance machine, that they've been really good. So I do think that those quotes, when seen in the context of all of that, are very, very interesting. But I do think it's also pretty poor that, you know, the Six Nations never thought of hauling Eddie Jones into Dublin today to defend his comments. I mean, he pretty much brought the game into disrepute by what he said. Between themselves and World Rugby basically, let the tournament itself handle these things. But he's one of World Rugby's best young referees.
And he was left.
I'm sure he's in the Rugby Union. They have a little bit, you know, and it's been up to the English RFU to kind of come out more strong than the tournament themselves. So that probably is a little bit disappointing.
Our rugby coverage with thanks to Vodafone, Team of Us, everyone in. Just to wrap up then, this Wales-Scotland game looks as though it's going to go ahead. Both of them have had, well, massively disappointing tournaments in one way. Scotland obviously got that seismic victory last weekend. Wales need something out of this.
Absolutely. I think Scotland will be going there fancying their chances, and they played very, very well in the Six Nations. They were very good in Dublin. They ran England close in horrendous conditions, dealt with a tricky game against Italy, and they were very good against France this weekend. So they're the form team. Wales are a strange one. I thought they were really poor in Dublin. I think England blew them away, but they showed great kind of fortitude to stay in the game at the weekend, and they can create something out of nothing. They're still a very good team, I think. And at home, they'll probably be too strong. But, like, this is such a weird game. It's going to be so hard to gauge. I mean, I don't know if you saw the pictures of the Scottish team flying out of Edinburgh this morning with their gloves on, you know? I know tickets range from, like 60 to £100 or something like that to go to a game in the Principality. But, like, I mean, unless you have to be there, why would you even put yourself in that sort of risk? I just don't get it. I mean, looking at Cheltenham, all this stuff, like Anfield last night, the Atletico players, you know, jumping all over each other. It's really hard to fathom, but it goes ahead. It gives us something to watch on Saturday afternoon. At the end of the day, I don't think Scotland are going to win the Six Nations, and Wales are already out of the running. So it's just this weird game that's going ahead, and it'll give us a bit of diversion, and we might have to just enjoy it for what it is, as possibly our last piece of professional sport that we can watch live, apart from Super Rugby, for the foreseeable future.
Rory, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Nathan. See you soon.
All right, well, Rory mentioned Cheltenham there, which is ongoing and looks as though is going to go into day four as well. We're going to be across Presby Park and John Duggan next.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of Us. Everyone in.